You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Welcome to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast dedicated to all things sci-fi, fantasy, and much, much more. Sit back and relax and enjoy the show. Hey everyone, it's Mike, and you're listening to another episode of the Earth Station 1 podcast. And this time, we are going to do our artist spotlight, and we are looking at George Perez. That's right, we are looking at one of the true masters of art of the last 30 years in the comic industry. And he just keeps on going. And if you ever get a chance to meet George, he's going to become your new best friend, basically. He, like we tell you, he's the best friend you never knew you had. And speaking of best friends, let's welcome this week's Earth Station 1 crew to us. Mike G is out, so sitting in for Mike is Kevin from the Flopcast.
Howdy.
Hey.
I tried.
You know, that was almost convincing.
I'm based up in the Boston area. I can't go full mini Pearl the way Mike does. I don't have a hat with a price tag hanging from it. That was the best howdy I could do, Mike, but I did it for you.
You did. And Mikey will be back next week. But yeah. Thank you for being here, Kevin, on short notice. And, you know, it's really appreciated. And, you know, how you been?
I've been good. We've been kind of laying low here in Chickentown, doing the Flopcast still every week, and kind of gearing up for convention season. I haven't been out to much as far as conventions yet this year, but have a couple coming up in the near future, which I think we'll get to in the con report.
Oh, definitely. Here's the question, though. Is Cornflake still doing her con a month?
Yeah, she is. She missed 1 month, but other than that, she's been on track. My co-host on the Flopcast, Cornflake, her New Year's resolution was to go to at least one convention a month all year. And so she's already way ahead of me as far as how many she's been to this year.
Wow. Is it just her trying to be more social, or...
She just likes to find silly little challenges for herself every year, and I think this was a fun one because she's going to be going out to some cool shows all year.
Oh, that's awesome. It sounds pretty cool when she does it. Now you just got to sneak her into Dragon Con.
That's the challenge. I would love to get her down there sometime to Atlanta for Dragon Con. I don't think it's going to happen this year because she's already tied up with another convention, I think, right around that same time. But someday, perhaps.
There is no other convention. Come on.
I agree.
Yes. When you think of Labor Day, you think of Dragon Con.
That's right.
Well, it's great to have you here, sir.
Great to be here. And, of course, we're look forward to Mike Gordon getting back up here on the station.
Oh, exactly. And, of course, we have joining us Mr. Almost Howdy, Mr. Darren Norell.
Yeah, I'm just surprised a guy from Boston knew who Minnie Pearl was. So, you know, hey, props to you, sir. Props to you.
They showed Heat Haw up there.
They certainly did.
It goes like this. Howdy!
Oh, so you can do it.
Well, oh, yeah, I'm from down here, son. Perfect. I got that down.
He'd be a Southern boy.
I'll be a Southern boy.
Born and raised. Exactly.
It is true.
He has his card-carrying Southern boy.
I do.
How are you, bud?
I'm okay. I'm here.
Yeah, I know.
It's been a rough weekend. I don't think there's a day this week that I've not gone to bed before 2 a.m.
Wow.
Just talking to people and commiserating and dealing.
Well, sometimes they say talking is the best therapy.
It is.
And I'm glad you were able to do that. And hopefully no one out there in our listening land or anyone personally knew of anyone or had anyone.
I actually discovered that I am a friend of mine from college. His ex-boyfriend lost his partner.
Mm. Oh, crap. So
I'm separated by 3 steps there.
Okay.
Wow. Yeah. We are a small community. We're a lot smaller than we would like to think we are. Oh. You know what I mean? So when stuff like this happens, yeah, it's like Kevin Bacon's game.
Oh, yeah. I totally understand that. But yeah, it's disgusting, and we're going to forego with like the usual rants and raves and such, but we wanted to let everybody out there know that everyone here at the ESO Network, we want, you know, to know that you're in our thoughts for everyone down at the Pulse at Orlando. It was just, it's horrific to think about. And we're going to take a moment of silence and, you know, as a sign of respect. Sorry to do that, folks, but, you know, sometimes life gets in the way and sometimes it craps all over you. And, you know, I'm glad that person got what was coming to him and the truth is coming out about this person. And it's just, it's crazy how politicized it's gotten, and it's just, it's BS. And we try to keep politics and stuff out of the show, but sometimes it needs to be said. And, you know, like we said earlier, our thoughts are in, you know, for the people in Orlando. And, you know, we think about you all the time. Let's take a quick break, and we will be back in a moment with the Geek Seat.
Welcome to Myobi Defend Your Childhood, the podcast where every week we put a little bit of your past on trial. Wait, you don't know who we are? Well, fine. First, we take a movie that you like. You know the ones. The ones the buses always had on field trips.
We got a real jam going down. Welcome to the Space Jam.
The afternoon animated show tie-in.
Or rewrite history. DuckTales.
Or the ones your parents didn't want you to see, but you watched at a sleepover. So that's the game. Movies are 10 years old and the defendant hasn't seen them in 5. Then we, well...
We're here to talk about The Sandlot. When I was a kid, I wasn't allowed to play with the other children, so this is how I learned human interaction.
Ask them what they think.
Obviously, I remembered your wigs, because as soon as my parents found out that I was deathly afraid of parasites, they were like, let's show her Wrath of Khan.
So, in the end, does your past hold up? Can you defend your childhood? Tune in every Thursday to find out.
Welcome back. We are now here with this week's guest slash victim in the Geek Seat. Let's welcome Alex Ogle to the show.
Hey, guys.
Hey, Alex.
Hey.
How are you this week?
I'm great.
So you want to tell everybody about yourself? Give them the elevator speech, as we like to say.
Well, I'm a comic book artist mainly and creator. I've done a couple Kickstarter projects, and I do a book called Midnight Over Stellar City. It's related to Hero Cats for Action Lab. I do mainly the art on that book. The writer, Kyle Puttkamer, writes the regular Hero Cats series and writes the book I work on as well.
Oh, sure. We're friends with Kyle over at Galactic Quest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's awesome. And that is awesome. So how long have you been doing that for?
We did a 3-issue run last year, and I've been doing another 3-issue run this year, and I'm working on that first book right now.
Oh, that's awesome. And yeah. What, you know, are you working on other projects or you have, you know?
I've completed a couple Kickstarters. I have a Kickstarter I'm actually fulfilling right now. It's my art book. And that's shipping next month. So that's a lot of fun. That's a collection of everything I've done. I'm up to like, it's a 70-page book right now. So
that is awesome.
Yeah.
And how close are you to your goal?
Well, the goal was met and achieved months ago, and so now I'm just in fulfillment stage. So I'm getting the book printed and everything like that. So
that is awesome.
Yeah. I've done 3 Kickstarters now, and so I hope to do another one probably next year or closer to the end of this year. So we'll see how that goes.
That is fantastic. And so this is the big question we always like to ask people before the Geek Seat. How can they find you?
Oh, it's alexogle.com. It's alexogle.com.
Okay.
Yeah.
That is awesome. And, you know, do you do any cons and such or?
Oh, yeah. I'll be at Fanboy Expo in Knoxville, Tennessee. I guess it's the weekend after this one.
Okay.
And that'll be,
be a lot of fun. The final weekend in June. Got it.
Yeah. And then after that, I think RobCon. Is my next show, and that's the end of next month, I believe. Yeah. So yeah, those are my shows for now. I usually don't plan too far out, like a couple months ahead, but yeah.
No, to completely understand that. And that's awesome that you can, you know, do the different shows and such. Mm-hmm. And so you're up located up in what, Chattanooga, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm in Chattanooga area, North Georgia. Yep.
Oh, yep. That is right awesome.
On, Chattanooga lines was, you know, sits right on the line between on Georgia and Tennessee side. So yeah, it's right there. So that's where I'm at. I travel to Atlanta or to Nashville or Knoxville for shows a lot, or any of the surrounding areas within 5 or 6 hours.
Right. We've been to Chattanooga a few times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's our local show.
Exactly. And we've had some really great times there. Chattanooga is such a great community for the arts too. So
it is. We have a comics co-op now that we've started, and we've been meeting every other week. And so it's like little comic book creators and everybody get together and talk to newbies that are just trying to get into it. Or we meet at a comic shop in Chattanooga. So it's kind of fun too.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
Alex, I've been browsing through your website, and it's a beautiful work.
Thank you.
Gorgeous stuff. It looks like a lot of black and white work with some kind of gray tones to it. Is that how you prefer to work, or do you also do color?
I color stuff too, but I really like the comics from the 80s. That's when I was really into books, and when I'd go to shops and go through back issues and find stuff that was being created by other than Marvel and DC stuff, you know?
Yeah, that black and white, the independent boom of the 80s, yeah, and good stuff.
I found a book called, you know, Psycops that was done by Brian Stelfreeze back then, and I just fell in love with that. And I've always had a love of the black and white ever since then. So
it's beautiful work. I love a lot of heavy shadows. It kind of reminds me of some of Gene Collins' work almost.
Yeah, I do a lot. I do a lot of stuff with shadows. I try not to do a lot of surrounding lines. A lot of comic book artists you'll see just surround everything and then add a few shadows here and there, which works really great for color. But I like to try to, like, go really heavy on the darks and see what happens then. It's kind of exciting.
Who are some of the people you know, look up to in the artists industry?
I look at Mike Mignola and Jay Lee, Tim Sale, you know, Frank Miller, those kind of guys.
Everybody, well, certainly the Frank Miller Sin City work has a lot of that same use of shadow as opposed to just drawing an outline around everything.
I know. I was waiting to hear that, because when I looked at your site, I was just liking, oh, somebody likes Sin City here.
Yeah, that stuff's really great. It's fun. I also like to, you know, do a lot of superhero type art in that same style. So it's kind of fun to try to bring that look to those heroes.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. Kind of the noir feel to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is awesome. Well, enough with the chit-chat. You know the real reason we brought you here. The Geeks Eat Hungers.
Okay.
So, Kevin, guess what?
This is my big chance. I've been strapped in that thing. Now
you get to do the strapping.
The captive has become the captor.
Exactly.
It will be my pleasure to strap down Alex Ogle in the Geek Seat. Here we go.
I'm ready.
All right. Remember, he has to breathe, Kevin. You know.
We'll allow a little breathing.
Okay. You know, just we want a slight blue, not totally. But in his case, it would be black and white, so it's okay.
Yeah.
All right, Alex. Your first question in the Geek Seat. What was your favorite geek out moment?
It's every time I really meet other artists that inspire me, I think, because that's really when I totally lose it and become a geek. But it's just a fanboy at that point as well. But it's rough. I always get a little nervous, and you know, it's fun. I met Mike Mignola at C2E2 earlier this year, and I totally geeked out at that point.
Oh, I could understand why.
Yeah.
Oh, that is awesome though. What was your most disappointing geek out moment?
It follows right after that when I start talking. That's the problem, is you totally become, you know, you say the worst things to these people and you're like, oh, I can't believe I said that. And you know, get nervous. So yeah, that's the worst for me.
Oh, that is awesome. I think that's most of the geek world out there.
Yeah.
I think Kevin and I can both attest to that one.
Oh, absolutely. Anytime I'm talking to someone remotely well-known at a convention, we're having a conversation, but also in my head, I'm thinking, I sound like an idiot.
Yeah, you ask the worst questions. And that's you need, you think about it over and over and replay that in your head, too. It doesn't help. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hit it right on the head there, sir.
Yeah.
What geeks you out the most?
Going to conventions, really, and getting to talk comics and just stuff I'm into the whole time, and talk about art. That's what I love the most, and that's when I really have fun. So,
of course. What has been your favorite con?
Oh, that's a tough choice. Last year, I think I did like 15 conventions, different sizes, all from little tiny shows to larger shows. And I think probably Dragon Con last year was a lot of fun for me.
Mm-hmm.
That was the first time I ever set it up there, and just the crowds of people and getting to talk that much to all the different people and their opinions and their love of art and everything was really cool to experience.
Being up in Artist Alley, you could totally see almost everybody who comes to the con at least once.
I know. It's a sea of people. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm. What turns your geek off?
Probably talking about shows and things I'm not familiar with, like Games of Thrones and like all these other shows people talk to me about all the time, and I'm like, I've never even watched one episode of that, and that's when I'm like, I'm always scared that to talk about properties or anything that I have no idea what it is, so I try not to do that.
You don't want to go, oh, that crap show, no way.
Yeah.
And the people walk away. I'll take my artwork money elsewhere.
It's like, he's not a geek. He doesn't know nothing about that show. He's totally lost. But yeah, it's hard to be a part of all this media. You know, you can only consume so much before you have to produce. And so I have to pick and choose how much time I get to spend consuming.
Oh, we get every day like, oh, are you watching this show? Are you watching this? Yeah. Have you seen this movie? It's like, I do like to sleep sometimes.
Yeah.
And that's exactly. We've talked about this so many times, but there's just so much high quality stuff these days. You can't watch everything that's great. You have to pick and choose just among the best.
Exactly. Yeah,
right now, I'm just trying to catch up on Gotham. That's my big thing at the moment.
That's a fun one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
definitely. Yeah. Well, at least you have the summer to do it till it comes back in the fall.
Exactly. Yeah.
As we like to call summertime, catch up time. Like, we're power watching Supergirl right now, so it's like,
oh yeah, Supergirl. I loved watching that. I watched that with my 8-year-old daughter. It was a lot of fun.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
My 16-year-old son is just rolling his eyes at that when I told the world I'm watching it, you know.
It's actually pretty good. I'm surprised.
Oh,
really good.
It has been awesome, actually.
Yeah, I really like it.
When I watched the first episode, I was just like, eh, maybe, but then it's like definitely caught on when they showed Red Tornado. It was just like, oh, I'm stuck. I'm here. Yeah. you got me. And then John Jones, it was just like, I never thought I'd see him on TV. Oh, spoilers, by the way, folks.
Yeah. Are you up to the point where you've seen the Flash like crossover into it?
There's a Flash crossover?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Spoiler, sorry.
That'd be a no.
No, I knew about that. Don't worry. I had to play with you there. What fictional character would you like to meet the most?
Wolverine, because I'd like to see how his hair really should be. Yeah.
Just don't get on his bad side. Just keep Hopefully on buying, not. Keep on bringing him beers. He'll be happy. What fictional character would you like to meet the least?
Well, I just watched the X-Men Apocalypse, so Apocalypse would be my choice of characters I don't want to meet.
I can understand that. You don't want to become one with the wall or something.
No, I don't want to melt into everything. That's not good.
Yeah, I could see that. What is your favorite geek word, phrase, quote, or pose?
Well, I have to go with pose, which is the superhero landing. That's my pose of. I love it whenever they do that in movies. I don't care if Deadpool's pointing it out or not. It's awesome.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
What is your ideal geek occupation?
Oh, clearly being a comic book artist. That's my choice.
Wow. Okay. Well, you kind of have a shoe in there, I think. Already.
Yeah. Yeah.
What geek occupation would you not like to do?
Oh, that would be submissions editor. Because that guy, you have to turn down so many people because it's crazy how many artists are looking for work out there. And so it's a rough gig.
Oh, I completely understand that.
Yeah.
I used to be the assistant to the art director for a magazine once, and we had photographers and artists always submitting stuff. Hey, have you looked at my stuff yet? Yeah. Please don't call me or email me ever again.
Yeah, I like to think that all I have to do is keep doing my own stuff and I get work instead of submitting things all the time. Because that's that rejection is not fun. And it happens to everybody.
So oh, yeah.
It's rough.
Agreed.
Yeah.
All right, Alex. Are you ready for your final question in the geek seat?
Yeah, yeah.
All right. All right. Let's pull the straps a little tighter, Kevin. He's getting a little too happy here.
You got it. Hang on.
Okay. All right. I'm ready. Okay.
What is your ultimate geek fantasy?
That would be to be invited to reinvent some major character or something. Like if they were just like, hey, let's see your version of Wolverine or your Batman or, you know, that would be a lot of fun. That would be my fantasy. I think about that every time I'm drawing a book. I'm thinking, oh, I wish if someone just came to me and was like, we want to see your vision of this. That would be fantastic.
Well, Alex Ogle, congratulations. Yeah. You've made it through the Geek Seat. It does not mean we're releasing you.
Oh, okay. Still strapped down.
Oh, yeah. Kevin can testify. He still has the strap mark, so it's okay.
He's still to this day.
Exactly. And he lives in New England, and they're still on there, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So that's pretty awesome, though. Well, one more time, can you tell everyone how they could find you and what? And you tell them about the con you're going to be at next?
Sure. It's let me look up Fanboy here if I can get the dates for everybody. You can find me at alexogle.com, which is alexogle.com. And I'll be at in Knoxville at Fanboy Expo, June 24th through the 26th. So, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thank you. It was a lot of fun.
All right. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment. Hey, everyone. We are now here to talk about everyone's best friend he hasn't met yet. We are going to be talking about George Perez, one of the most amazing artists out there. When you think of any kind of superhero team of the last, 30 years now, he's pretty much the person who's drawn them. And it's just amazing stuff. His work, the detail he goes into, it's almost like none other. And we have a great crew to talk all about George. And let's welcome back to the show, of course, Mr. Bobby Nash.
Hi, guys.
How are you, Bobby?
Hey, Bobby.
Wonderful. So nice to get out of the airlock for a stroll around the station.
Well, we dusted off your old chair for you, even.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah, we figured since Gordon's not here, I can bring it out. It's okay.
Well, you know, we had those new contract negotiations. You know, Mike and I cannot be in the same room at the same time. It cannot happen.
makes me wonder. They're never seen at the same time as each other. Secret identity?
I don't have the howdy down, sorry.
Ah, damn. Well, it's good to have you back, sir.
Oh, it's good to be back.
And, of course, we talking about George Perez, we have to have one of my favorite comic book people, Mr. Darren Norwell.
Hi, everybody. What's up?
How are you, bud?
I'm here. I am here.
I'm glad you're here.
I am here.
Especially after this last week.
And yeah, it's been a rough week.
Yeah.
A rough week. And so, yeah.
So
let's not bring everybody down. Let's move on.
No, we talked a little bit about it at the beginning of the show, and I'm sure it'll come up later also.
Probably at the next time we do a little LGBT podcast, I think is when it'll come up next.
Oh, I think very much so.
I don't think we can avoid it. So
nah, and that's only what I think 2 or 3 episodes away.
Yeah.
So
well, yeah,
it'll be cool. All right, so let's get started. I'm going to throw out to each one of you. When did you first see George Perez as an artist, as in comics, not meeting in person? Let's go start with Bobby.
Well, I started, my first contact was either I probably noticed him on Justice League first because I'd seen a few issues of Justice League here and there when he was drawing it. But where I first noticed the name of the person drawing it was when they were working on New Teen Titans.
Oh, sure.
Because I was a Marvel boy growing up, you know. I was reading all the Marvel books. I didn't really read a lot of DC stuff. And when I was 12, we moved. And the first people that I met in my new school were comic guys. and they were reading comics I was unfamiliar with. And so the first one, the first two comics I was introduced to when we moved were X-Men, which I had not heard of before. And I know. Uh-huh. And New Teen Titans, which I had also never heard of. Obviously, I knew who Robin was, and I knew who the characters were, but I didn't know they were a team. And started reading Titans, and I'm just like, my God, this is good. And really started to notice who the creative team was, and started following those guys to other books as well. And then, of course, there's this little thing called Crisis.
Little thing, come on. All right, what about you, Kevin?
Well, I was a DC kid, so George was completely off my radar until he started working for DC, which I think was 1980. And even then, so I certainly saw some of his work at that time on Justice League, and also on, I think technically his first work for DC was in Firestorm backup in Flash. So that was when DC expanded. They jumped from 40 cents to 50 cent cover price, and they added backup stories
to
all their comics. And they added a Firestorm backup to The Flash, and I think that was George's first work, JLA at that time as well. So I was reading that stuff, but I don't think the name was really registering with me or making an impact that early on. It wasn't until New Teen Titans as well. Even that, I didn't become a regular New Teen Titans reader until a couple of years in, probably almost up to Judas Contract.
Oh, wow.
And at that point, I started seeing some articles, like in the fan press, Comics Collector magazine, things like that, about what a remarkable phenomenon New Teen Titans had become. And I was just starting to seriously collect more comics at that time. So I jumped right on New Teen Titans, and that's when I really started appreciating what a remarkable talent he was.
Okay, what about you, Darren?
Justice League of America number 200.
Oh, awesome! Awesome.
That was my first real comic.
Classic issue.
I had picked up a couple here and there, but I didn't pay attention to them, you know. But that was, you know, Super Friends wasn't on all the time, and when it was on, it was a rerun, and I wanted my Super Friends. So for my birthday, I went up to the Magic Market, it was the Magic Market back then, and they had Justice League America. I'm like, oh, I am getting this. It's like, but you wanted a Slurpee, and I only had like $5, you know, because I was like a kid. Like, well, I'm going to get this instead. I don't want the Slurpee. So I got my first comic book, and then I came back and I got New Teen Titans and Legion at the same time.
You know, sure.
And it all started. So yeah, Justice League first, but then, yeah, New Teen Titans, no question.
Oh, yeah.
No question.
Okay, for me, actually, go back a little bit further. It was actually the first time I had seen him, but I didn't know him as a name, was his Fantastic Four.
Nice.
When he did the Impossible Man story. And because that's when Impossible Man invaded Marvel Comics. And so I was like, oh, this art's good. I like this. And then I started recognizing him as a name when he was on the Avengers and he did the Korvac saga. And because I was a very loyal Avengers reader at that point. And it was the first, because Avengers had been kind of, because I think it was Sal Buscema was doing the artwork and such before that. And then seeing George take over, it was just amazing to see. And I was heartbroken, though, because he, after the Korvac saga, he left to go to DC, but at least he was going for Justice League, because I think Dick Dillon had just passed away.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And George was taking over for Dick. And it was awesome, the stuff, because I think that first storyline he did was the Injustice League storyline. It was a crossover with the Justice Society.
Uh-huh.
And it was beautiful. Seeing him do the Golden Age heroes was just like, oh, this is cool. And ever since, you know, Teen Titans and all his other work was just astounding. And
you know, during the time of that transition when he moved from Marvel to DC, there was even a little overlap, I think. Like, he was practically doing all three of those major team books at the same time. So I think Marv Wolfman even pointed that out in a letters column back then, that George was essentially drawing Avengers, JLA, and Teen Titans almost simultaneously.
Mm-hmm.
And it was also, it was a big deal, too, that this young guy is taking over from Dick Dillon, because that was Dick Dillon had, he was the, He was like the Kurt Swan of Justice League.
Yeah.
He was the guy. I mean,
yeah, he was the guy.
He was the guy. I mean, he, that's who did Justice League. And so here you've got this basically kid, because George was very early 20s, maybe mid 20s.
Yeah, mid 20s.
You know, I mean, it was a big deal, but he came on and quickly made a name for himself with the stock with it. And we've referred to him as an artist, but I think George,
creator, would that be a better word?
Yeah, I think there's a storytelling that George brings that you can do a lot with George with no words. And there have been times where that has certainly caught me. And one of the earliest was, I don't remember issue numbers. Sorry, I am awful with those. But there's a Justice League where on the cover, it's got the playing cards with the Justice League on them, and like the skeleton is holding.
That is Justice League of America number 203, sir.
Okay, that was the first one, because I'm just like, I saw that cover and I just kind of went, oh, this is good. You know, this has got to be good. And there's a scene inside where Aquaman is coming up on the house where the bad guys are, and we're in the house with the bad guys. But in the background of the panel, you can see Aquaman getting closer and closer until he like dives through the window. And it's one.
You're talking about the JLA JSA crossover.
That may be what I'm talking about. Okay.
And I'm sorry, I got that confused with Royal Flush Gang. My bad.
That's cool. I could have the cover mixed up too, because you know I'm old and these things happen. And I work in comics, and that rots your brain. But there's just a fluidity to George's storytelling, and we could probably go on and on about favorite scenes that do that. But
He has so many of them.
Right. And but, you know, I think, you know, we certainly don't want to just refer to him as artist, because he and Marv Wolfman had an incredible way of working together, which is unique compared to how comics are made today.
Well, exactly, because his run on Titans was amazing, and they were co-creators. It didn't say writer Marv Wolfman, artist George Perez. It was just straight by Marv Wolfman and George Perez. You know,
and if you ever hear them talking at a con or anything about how they did it, I mean, they lived fairly close to one another, and they would either meet for lunch or would get on the phone and say, okay, what are we going to do this issue? And they would talk for an hour or whatever. And each of them is making notes. George would go off and draw it and then give it back to Marv, and they would talk again. And it was a very, that way they were both plotting together. They were both, and a lot of stuff, there was a magic that the two of them together.
Absolutely. They were even both co-editors for part of the run. I mean, George and Marv shared editing credits, so they were really in complete control of that book.
Don't tell it to Klaus Jensen, because, you know, he feels bad about his inking, so hey, you're basically just tracing anyway, so it's okay.
Wow. Yeah, true.
But it was awesome. The work they did together, and George's, just the detail of George's art. That's, I think, what drew me to him, was the amount of detail. And he drew the superheroes the way you expected them to appear. It wasn't like, you know, a little cartoony. It wasn't a little rough. And I think part of the reason I was drawn to him was because at the time I was reading New X-Men. And I thought it was, someone very similar to John Byrne. But I think George took it to the next level, even past what John Byrne did.
Yeah, there was a detail to George's work that, like you said, that went on. But he also was good at drawing them. It wasn't just drawing superheroes.
No.
He had them, you know, there are so many issues where they're in regular clothes and they're out doing regular things. And those pages are just as dynamic as when they're over here fighting bad guys.
Yeah, it's really the most memorable moments from New Teen Titans, I think, are just those personal character moments. And there were so many of them. You know, they'd ride that little barge across the river to go to Titans Tower and just have those deep conversations with each other. And it worked. It was mesmerizing reading. And that's such a credit to the storytelling power that George had. Also, the way, and especially the look, and George was getting better by leaps and bounds in the early issues of New Teen Titans. He was still kind of getting into the hang of what that book was going to become. And if you look at just his, the faces of his characters, the way he developed very distinct looks for all his characters, to the extent that it doesn't matter if they're wearing their superhero costume or not, you still know, you look at even a black and white picture of Dick Grayson, he looks different from Wally West and Gar Logan. Mm-hmm. Everybody has their own look. And so many even classic comic book artists don't do that. Even you look at a Kurt Swan, for example.
Yeah, all the guys look the same.
Yeah, who I love Kurt Swan, but you take a Kurt Swan Superman, shave his hair off, now you're looking at a Kurt Swan Lex Luthor.
Yeah,
right.
kind of like a John Romita Sr. Everybody looked like Peter Parker.
Exactly. If you look at a showcase volume of Legion of Superheroes back in the day, yeah, all the guys look alike.
Sure.
All of them. It's hard to tell.
You couldn't even tell which one was Brainiac 5.
No, because it's black and white. How can you tell? It's the same dude. But actually, the whole George evolving with the character styles and everything actually became a plot point in the Raven story.
Oh, that's right.
Raven started as this very fresh-faced young girl, but as time went on in the book, her widow's peak began to get more pronounced and her cheeks began to get more sunken in. And by the time when she actually showed her face in, I think, issue 6 for the first time, or issue 4, and then by the time it got time for Raven to have that final confrontation with Trigon, she had stopped taking her hood off altogether. And that became a really interesting plot point. Actually, that she was changing Raven's look all along, but it actually became making her more evil looking as we go through time.
Yeah. I believe it was like some fan had asked him a question about that. Why don't you ever show her without the hood? And then they kind of looked at it and went, hey.
There's an idea.
And and you're talking about, and you mentioned that final battle with Trigon too.
Oh God!
When we went to that new Baxter series where George was inking himself and
yep.
Oh my, it's so beautiful. And that book just leaps and bounds. I mean, the art is incredible. The story is incredible. Mm-hmm. That was the early days of comic shops.
Yep.
Direct market. It was, so there was a lot of stuff writing on that one book for DC. But I also remember there was a little controversy as well because yes. There was that one panel where
that one panel. Oh no, not the one panel.
Dick and Corey.
Yeah, where Raven, the scream happens and it wakes everyone up, and Dick and Corey are in the same bed together.
Oops.
Shocking all everyone.
Yeah,
except readers.
All right, we read it. Went, oh, cool. What's going on? Why are we screaming? What's happening? And parents are like, oh my God, oh, they're in bed together.
I mean, that was a discussion for months in the letters column.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, exactly. And we're not surprised, though, because think about how Corey learned how to speak English.
Yeah.
In the very first issue.
I was about to phrase that completely. She learned it by kissing Robin. I was about to say something.
hey.
Yeah, exactly. And Gar.
Boy Wonder after.
Exactly. And Wally was like, oh, you lucky bastard.
Wally had the mystic mojo from Raven, so.
That was a big deal at the time, though, for DC's biggest book to go to a new format and go to comic book sales only. And that was when they were trying out that kind of odd system of then a year later, we'll reprint it for the newsstands.
Mm-hmm.
And
exactly. And also no comic code.
Right. Which got weird because, well, wait a minute, we're going to reprint these things in a year to the newsstands. So how outrageous can
how
get?
How's that gonna work? Yeah. Oops.
And we saw how that one panel freaked a bunch of people out.
Oh, it did. Not all the demonic imagery of Trigon. No, the thing that freaked them out was the two characters in bed.
No, yeah. Of course.
Boyfriend and girlfriend in a loving relationship for, what, now 30 issues?
Something now like we have that, a problem.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't even have a breakup or any lover spats.
Nope.
And it's like, come on, people. This is completely natural. I mean, when Superman and Lois finally got together and they turned off the lights, and then the next day, they woke up, and they're in the kitchen having breakfast. You know what happened between the gutter.
Yeah. Well, and it's one of those things, too. It's not even drawn in a way that's overtly sexy or anything.
No, it's like they got startled awake.
Exactly, It's like, yeah, they were sleeping.
Or let's be honest, Corey would be on top.
What?
Yeah. Oh man. but it is interesting.
Adult filter.
I'm sorry. Did you invite me on the podcast?
Of course we did. But it was interesting because George stayed with Titans until he went on a leave and took on a bigger adventure.
Yes.
That little book.
That little book that did nothing.
Exactly.
Did nothing.
You might have never heard of Crisis on Infinite Earths, folks. He drew almost every character in the DC universe.
And one in the Marvel.
Exactly. Yeah.
And actually, we should probably, too, you know, because as I know this is all about George, but I think we should also mention Romeo Thangal, who was George's inker through Teen Titans.
And Adrian Roy, who did the coloring.
Exactly. Yep. Because this was a team that stayed together a long time.
That Who is Donna Troy book? Beautiful. Not one superhero fight in it.
Beautiful. The issue where Donna gets married.
Oh, yeah. Tales of the Teen Titans number 50 was 50. Beautiful. Yeah. And again, there's no fights. There are no supervillains. That was a double-sized issue of a wedding.
Of a wedding.
Which seems insane to publish in a superhero comic, but it was wonderful.
Mm-hmm. And then we get to the Judas contract, which I know you've already mentioned. And
oh, dear Lord.
Whew, Tara. We could do an episode all on its own about the Judas contract.
Yeah, that is not the Deathstroke the Terminator that you know from the TV show.
No, it is not. And poor Jericho, everyone thought he was gay because he was mute. It was in the letter columns. Is Jericho gay? Yes or no? Sure.
Yep, that's true.
Like, they had to show him painting a girl in his loft to kind of get the point across, even though it was kind of clear that he had a thing for Raven, but you know,
and they
made the step of not giving him a thought balloon,
right?
You know,
plus he spoke in sign language, and they made it a point to show the sign language. Mm-hmm.
But then he was able to speak when he took over somebody else's body,
if they were unconscious.
Yes.
So, it makes me want to break them out and read them because
absolutely.
It was a great run.
DC is currently reprinting the new Teen Titans in new trades.
Are they?
I think they're up to four
money,
of them
money,
are
money.
Out.
Money. And
the fifth one is about to come out in the next month or two. So you can find them. They're not super expensive, like $20.
That's not bad.
No, that isn't bad at all.
That is not bad at all.
That's not bad for the level of quality you're getting in a comic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they are great stories, folks.
They hold up. I mean, I reread the whole series just a couple of years ago, like up through the Danny Chase era, pretty much it was actually a good stopping point because that's when Marv and George went back to do games, the graphic novel, a couple of years ago. Which kind of was set in that continuity right around that point. And that was a book that they started working on, like New Teen Titans games, 20 years ago or 30 years ago, and didn't finish it until just a few years back. And it's really good.
It's really good.
Yep.
No, very much so. So let's get into Crisis.
Yeah.
Oh, God. How long
well, do there's we have? The rest of the episode.
Yeah. How long do we have? I mean, holy crap. I mean...
I don't know if people can appreciate
crap.
younger readers who weren't reading at the time, who have grown up in a world of comics where there's a major universe-changing crossover event every 18 months, cannot appreciate how huge Crisis really was at the time.
Yeah, because things like that just they did not happen.
No, this is the first time. And basically, the editors at DC were like going, you know, we have, 50 years of comic book history. This is getting too confused to the younger people. So let's try to clean it up. And so they brought on George and Marv to do it.
Yep.
And man, did they do good.
Yeah.
But it was also one of those, as Kevin mentioned, where we've kind of gotten into event fatigue, where events happen and then... Everything resets. We're right back to normal. Crisis. I mean, there is a nice delineation point where if you stop reading at the end of Crisis, you've pretty much ended.
The end of the Silver Age.
Yeah, I mean,
that's it.
Because they did hard reboots of almost everything after that.
Well, exactly. After that, George took over Wonder Woman, actually.
Yes.
Sure. Yep.
And we could probably do an episode on that. But Crisis was such a... It was one of those times that when they killed characters, you go, oh, they're dead.
Yeah, they were dead. They were dead. They were Uncle Ben. They were so dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of them haven't come back even.
Well, yeah. I do laugh that the two biggest deaths of Crisis are both stars of their own hit TV shows.
I know, right? Isn't that ironic?
Because those characters in the 80s were... They didn't work, and I'm doing air quotes as I say that. But that was the thing.
Barry was dull.
Yep.
And they were going to cancel his book, and Carmine Infantino was going to retire, I believe. And they're like, okay, well, it's a good time to stop this from happening again. And then Supergirl's movie tanked.
Yep.
Oh, so big time.
That killed her off, like, in a heartbeat. And John Byrne's like, yeah, I only want one Superman because he's not – you take all the super characters – mm-hmm. And there were a multitude of
a lot of
Krypton. You can't really say last son of Krypton when there's like even a monkey. So, you know, it just got crazy. So they're like, yeah, just Superman now.
Mm-hmm.
Then that led to all kinds of craziness.
Poor Legion of Superheroes.
Poor Legion of Superheroes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Dear God. They got screwed in a way that Crisis didn't even show on their pages. It was just like, wow. Okay, fine.
So. But if you want to look at a book too, as big as the event is, it's a fun read. It's a good read. Sometimes it's not fun. It's a good read, but the art is absolutely gorgeous.
Oh, it is great, but it jumped around a bit because I've just recently picked up the trade, and it was interesting because there were so many side stories that a lot of the characters went off into.
Yep. Yeah.
And
that started happening when they realized that Crisis was actually selling.
Yeah, exactly.
All the other books didn't want to be a part of Crisis, and then it became we want that sales boost.
Yeah, when you think about what a logistical nightmare this must have been, and so many moving pieces, you know, all the editors and executives at DC, no one quite knew what they were doing as they were doing it. Things kept changing. So to come out with as strong a story as they did is pretty remarkable.
While Marv and George were still putting out Titans every month as well. Because they didn't stop one to do the event.
So, well, I thought George took a leave for
George stopped after issue 5 of Titans.
Yeah, but he was still working. Yeah, he was still working on them both for a time.
Well, he was co-plotting, but he wasn't doing art chores anymore because Crisis was just too intense.
Yeah, and he got really burnt out from doing Crisis. Who wouldn't, though?
Right.
Because even at the same time, they also did that the history of the DC Universe, which was that beautiful two-part prestige format series kind of showing the new timeline theoretically. And on top of that, George was also doing most of the covers for Who's Who.
Yes, that's right. True. Yes. Yep. Not to mention all the tie-in covers for, he didn't do all of them, but he did a lot of tie-in covers for Crisis for other books as well.
Oh, very much so.
The man worked.
Yes.
Oh, he earned his keep for a while.
He makes the rest of us look like lazy bastards.
That's really what sealed his reputation as If you need a guy who can draw everybody, sometimes all at once in one big picture, that's the guy to do it.
Yep. And I was surprised when Crisis ended, you would figure, okay, George is going to take a year off. No, what does George do? I'm going to write and draw Wonder Woman.
Yeah, which he did for a couple of years. Yeah. Well, he wrote it for even longer, but he drew it for the first 2 years, I think, and it was beautiful. Kind of tied in a lot of the Greek myth. Mythology was really firmly established as part of Wonder Woman.
They made Wonder Woman more of a serious character.
Yeah.
You know, more of tying all the mythologies and, you know, tying down her origin. And
yeah, because Wonder Woman as a character, one of the major characters of DC, but that as a character, she had just been floundering for decades, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's true.
And it was interesting to see, you know, how good he did it because he had a passion for the characters. And, you know, some of these characters are even still around today that he introduced.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And the mythology has remained a big part of Wonder Woman. I mean, that was always there to a small degree, but he really brought it to the forefront. And, I mean, I know they're still doing that with the character today.
Well, Rebirth.
In a little different way. But, I mean, there's still a tie to mythology.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think there should be.
Yeah.
And that's what makes Wonder Woman wonder fall, mm-hmm. or one dress, if you would, because without that tie to the Greek mythology and that warrior of legend, she kind of becomes a Xena,
right?
Yeah,
really quickly.
Very much so.
She needs to have that anchoring in that mythos so that she has that weight of a no. I'm a serious character here.
Well, I think
to do some whoop ass.
Yeah.
Not that Xena's not serious, but it's a totally different take on a character.
Right. Well, I think one of the things that George brought to the book was, yes, she's a badass superhero slash warrior slash whatever, but when she's not that, she's this ambassador of peace, mm-hmm. and she's over here with the Capitellus family, and she, you know, she's making friends. She's in a new city, which I thought was brave, getting her away from all the other superheroes. And there's a very much like they did with Starfire in Teen Titans. They make Wonder Woman very human.
Yes.
Which I think had been missing from the book pre-crisis.
Yeah. I would agree with that completely.
That's very true. But it was interesting because then during that era, he also went back to Titans for a bit.
Yes, he did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A little bit.
In time to introduce us to a new Robin.
Sure.
Yeah. But not the second Robin. No.
No.
The third Robin.
Yes.
Yep.
Well, technically the fourth, but we won't go there.
Yeah. That's a whole different story.
It is.
We just got Robins.
Or the fifth. No, the fifth. Yeah, it would have been the fifth by this point.
But also during this era, though, he was also doing a lot of work for DC still, and he actually designed the battle armor for Lex Luthor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was even earlier. That was like early 80s, I think.
80s, yeah.
The big green suit of armor that you can't see to your side if you're wearing.
Exactly. It's right.
not a good suit for peripheral vision.
Yeah, well, right. Batman can't turn his neck in a movie, so it's okay.
Right, because after Wonder Woman, George started doing a lot more independent work.
Mm-hmm.
He was working for smaller press companies. He was doing more sci-fi, things of that nature. I think he just needed a break from superheroes, and he was doing these.
Yeah.
I remember seeing him do because in the 90s, he came back and was inking the Titans when Dan Jurgens was writing and drawing them.
Right.
And I remember seeing him at a convention on a panel, and someone asked him why he was inking Teen Titans. And George was like, well, I realized that I've been away from Marvel and DC for a good 10 years now, working mostly on these smaller projects. And this kid came up to my table and was looking at my work and says, wow, you're really good. You'll be the next Todd McFarlane. And George was like, I should probably do some high profile work.
Wow.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
And so, yeah.
Yeah.
See?
But then in 91, he went to work for Marvel again.
Mm-hmm.
And something you got to keep a watch out on, because this is going to be a movie very soon. He worked on the Infinity Gauntlet.
That's very true.
Oh, sure.
And yes.
Smart of Marvel, because he can draw a whole bunch of characters.
Exactly. And you're going to see that. That's the next Avengers movie.
Yep.
Exactly. He also did that weird he did a miniseries with Peter David. Remember Sax and Violins?
Oh, I love that. That was awesome.
That was cool.
Yes.
That was a very unusual project. It was an adults only series. Mm-hmm. There was nudity in it. It was very unusual to see these mainstream creators working for Marvel doing such a strange little series.
Oh my god, look what George is drawing. Look at that.
I think we can all agree that George appreciates the female form.
Yes.
You think?
I would say so.
And after you loves to draw it. Look, I mean, Starfire for crying out loud. Come on.
So
this is why you don't see Starfire cosplayers. How do you wear that?
they also did the Future Imperfect, which was Peter David and George as well, with the two-issue Hulk prestige thing. That was he was also writing Silver Surfer. I think that one got by a lot of people, but George wrote the Silver Surfer for a short time in the 90s.
Yeah, and he was also working on the Avengers. He came mm-hmm. back to it.
Yep.
And what was the character, Crosstrack or something?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. Yeah. I remember he wrote like a Giant Man miniseries, little things like that.
Yeah.
And we've got to mention JLA Avengers.
Oh, my God.
Crossover.
We had to wait forever for.
Oh, This was a series that George started drawing in the mid-80s. Like
mid-80s.
83, 84, he was working on Justice League Avengers crossover, and the whole project fell apart.
Multiple times.
Yeah, I remember reading, Dick Giordano at DC was writing editorials, kind of throwing all the blame on Marvel. Yep. I'm sure Marvel had their own take on whatever happened. But
they were talking about their direct competition.
Yeah,
it took 20 years later, George got to finally draw that story.
Oh, and it was beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, that's one thing. As much as people complained about some of the stuff that Joe Quesada did at Marvel, greenlighting that was the best idea
he had. Seriously.
Yeah.
And if you get the I've got the giant sized hardcover collection of JLA Avengers, that has his original pencils from the 80s in it as well.
You can see as well as the communications between Giordano and Shooter at yes. the time, which are fabulous to read. Let me tell you.
That is awesome. Yeah, it was a lot of fun to see, and I loved the styling he did, and he got every one of the characters correct. And as he said, we wanted to put anyone who's ever been an Avenger and anyone who's ever been in the Justice League, they are going to be in this comic.
Mm-hmm. And they teamed him up with a writer who has an encyclopedic knowledge of comics.
Yes.
In Kurt Busiek. So that, yeah. So like George is going like, yeah, Kurt's asking for characters I've never heard of.
Yeah.
It was perfect. That was exactly.
Like, George, remember the Who's Who? Go break those out. Go find your old Hot Move volumes and have at it.
You could not ask for anything more, I thought, in a JLA Avengers crossover. Yeah, they did it. That was, it was for the best that it took 20 years because we got such a remarkable project out of it. What about the cover of issue 3?
Oh,
that's like a Magic Eye poster. Right
there. Yeah.
Wait,
hold on.
And I'm so glad too that it all lined up that he could work on it, because I think had anybody else done it,
it would have worked. It would not have worked.
Yeah. No.
Or even if it had worked, it would have still been constantly comparative. Man, I wonder what George could have done with this.
Yep. Yeah.
That was one. Yeah. So
there was a story that he tells about how the papers came to him like the day before he was going to be, completely exclusive to a different company.
Well, actually, he was something, right? Yeah, he had just signed with CrossGen.
Right.
And CrossGen was one of those where you went into the office and worked.
Yeah, their creators worked in house in a studio, like it was the 40s.
Yeah, it was all that
sweaty.
And the guy that owned CrossGen was a big comic fan as well, and he he was still paying George's salary as part of CrossGen, but he allowed George to work on JLA Avengers because he knew how important it was to that George
comics history even. Yeah. I mean, that book's just amazing.
Yeah. And then George went back to CrossGen, which, CrossGen ended up not being as big a success. It did not stick around, I think, as long as everybody had hoped. But George did some really good stuff there. He never really got on anything that cemented him to go like, this is the, there's not one series that you point to and go, if you're going to read any CrossGen, this is it for George. But
no. There wasn't really anything with CrossGen that grabbed my attention. I like looked at, oh, George, that type of thing. But it wasn't anything, oh, I needed to go buy this.
Right. I will say, and there was also the, because I can't do a George episode without saying this, that I am in an issue of one of George's comics.
No way.
So, yes, I am one of the guys in Crimson Plague.
Really?
Yes, I am in issue number 2. I am taking pictures of rotting corpses for 2 pages.
Oh, goodness.
And, and I don't die because the series, unfortunately didn't go beyond 2 issues. But yes,
that was the plan was to, for your character to die. And
issue three,
we all knew going in that when we agreed to have our likenesses in the story, we were all under the assumption to prepare to be killed off.
Nice.
And but I'm in the book. I'm in the book for like two pages, and I'm on the official poster. He did a poster of the character and a bunch of headshots in the background, and I'm like under her breast. Mm-hmm. So,
well, okay, cool. That's yes. Awesome.
Most people would not recognize it because this was me a lot younger, different hair, no beard. Yeah, but I know it's me.
I know George, even in recent years, like he did a series called Sirens that he wrote and drew just a year or so ago. And he worked with a lot of cosplayers. He picked out some women to model specifically for the characters in that series.
Darn, I feel so bad for him.
Yeah, someone's got to do it.
Yeah.
The burden.
But, exactly. Yeah, if you've seen George Perez around conventions, and I think all of us on the call have, he is a friend of the cosplayers, and he's not just sitting behind his drawing table through a convention. He's out running around having fun with the customers.
He is always at the Wonder Woman shoot. Yep. Always.
Well, you know, he also directs some of those wrestling videos where they have cosplayers coming in like makeshift superhero. They obviously they can't use known characters, but they have like superhero wrestling with the ladies coming in costume and wrestling, and he directs a lot of those.
Wow,
that is awesome.
Have you guys met George at conventions?
Oh yeah,
yeah. Oh,
when
yeah.
I was a baby geek, baby geek, and he was at a con. I think it was a Dixie Truck. He didn't have anyone to kind of like watch his stuff. So I basically became, I was like a kid and I brought all my Titans issues and he gladly signed them. And I hung out with George all day. Nice. And he's like, hey kid, can you watch the table? I'm like, yeah, sure, George. Of course, he probably doesn't remember it because how many shows has he been to, please. But, you know, for me, that was just the best.
Best day ever.
I know. Best day ever.
Now you say that though, but when I've known, you know, George, I've seen George remember like people like that. He, you know, okay. I met him at a first time at a very small show here in Georgia. It's one where we had the Atlanta Comic Convention. Now I forget what con was there. The only guest I remember being there besides him was the guy from Babylon 5. I forget his name now. The commander of that show before Bruce Boxleitner. It was a small show, but I remember getting a sketch and having him sign some stuff. And that's where he was like, yeah, send me some photos and I'll put you in my comic, you know? And so I was like, awesome. Okay. So I got to, you know, met him there. It was cool. The next year we were at MegaCon in Florida and I was working with a small independent comic publishing company and had a couple things and we had a table. And so we're standing outside because the con hadn't opened yet, and we're leaning up. I knew some people in Florida. We were staying at their house, and so we rode into the con with them. We're standing out there, and we're talking, blah, blah, blah. And George comes walking across the parking lot. So our friend goes, you know, it's like, hey, I'm going to call George over here and introduce you guys. And so he yells for George. George comes over, and before he can get out of his mouth to go, I want to introduce you to, the first thing George goes is, hey, Bobby, how are you doing here in Florida?
That is awesome.
That's when he filed the restraining order.
Yes, exactly.
See, Mike Gordon is not the only one on this podcast who has restraining orders. I know Darren has one or two also.
I have a few, but George is not one of them because I ran into George at a MegaCon as well at the Golden Corral. He and his lovely wife were having breakfast, and we were having breakfast. It's like, oh, hi, George. He's just like, morning, you know, just walking about our business. It's hilarious. Mm-hmm. He's the nicest guys that you can ever meet at a con. I have no doubt about that whatsoever. And I think he is such a great force of positive energy at a convention. If George Perez is around, take the time out and just meet him. Stand at his table, shake the man's hand, you know, get a sketch. I think he mostly draws for the Hero Initiative now for the charity work. Because let's face it, he's got money. He doesn't need to like be a, you know.
No, think of all the residual checks he's getting from Teen Titans Go or something.
Yeah, thank you. But he really appreciates the interaction with the fans. He is a great guy to talk. He will tell you stories all day.
Yep.
Just one. Yeah, and it's sad that you have some creators, and it's just like, you know, they've got a reputation for either being surly or not that nice to fans. George is the one who will almost 99.9%, unless he ran over like a herd of kittens and some nuns on the way to the con that day, he's going to be in a good mood. You know?
And even if he did the other stuff, he'd still be in a good mood.
Probably. You know? Sure.
Yeah.
Probably.
Well, my memory with him actually involved Bobby Nash, actually. When we were at Dragon Con, we were hanging out in the upper lobby of the Marriott, just looking at different people in costumes and stuff. And there was these four people dressed as the Fantastic Four. And we were, you know, going, oh, these are great costumes. This is great. All of a sudden, George walks up and starts posing with them for people to take pictures.
He's like, hey. I drew you.
Exactly. And everyone was like, hey, you know, someone was like, hey, that's George Perez. He was an artist for the Fantastic Four. And it's like, yep, he was.
Mm-hmm. I've seen him pose like the Crisis Death of Supergirl. Like he'll hold up a Supergirl mm-hmm. costumer. Just fantastic pictures like that.
He did one year at Dragon Con, some of the cosplayers got together and they reenacted JLA Avengers. With
yep.
Wow. They even had Eternity and Infinity there.
Oh, that's awesome.
And George had a big prop pencil and was drawing Eternity in. It was hilarious. There's a YouTube of it. It's really nicely.
Great pictures. Great picture. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll give you two others. I'll give you two others. Our friend Raven, who's been on the show before, she was at Dragon Con. She went in her Raven Teen Titans cartoon costume. And I'm in. It's like, hey, you're a fan of Raven. You met George. And she's like, I don't know who George is. Sarah explained. Then she comes back going, over having met him, she was in a cosplay, like, catch for her. And she was, you know, she was just enamored how nice he was. She had no clue who he was.
Well, we were at, it was some con. It was a creation con. Or was some, and when I was a kid, and you know, as a kid, you know, I was already starting to do like cartooning and illustrations and such. And so I showed my artwork to him. And this is probably 1982, 83. And I was like, Mr. Perez, can I have you look at my artwork, please? And he was like, I like your stuff. You got a good style. He said, just what I want you to do is not everyone wears skin tight clothes. It's like, look around the con. How many people here are wearing skin tight clothes? He says, study how clothes fold. Study the shading. Study, you know, how it actually, clothes actually look on a person. And then, you know, it's like, even like, and he said with Raven, he based it off of his wife's yoga teacher, you know, and you know, her body and the shape of her body and how the clothes hang on her and everything. And I was like, oh, that is awesome.
Mm-hmm.
He took the time to do that with me.
But, and that's something that a lot of up and coming artists, they practice drawing superheroes all day long. That's great. But if you don't know how to draw a building, and if you don't know how to draw cars, if you don't know how to draw regular people, bystanders on the street, or, and George Perez, I think, does this better than any artist ever, debris.
Yes.
George Perez debris. You know it when you see it.
He does the second best Kirby crackle ever.
Thank you. But if you don't know those fundamentals as well, you're not going to last in the comic book industry.
Mm-mm.
Not as a paid comic from the two biggies. Not at all. So learn your fundamentals. Know that stuff.
And I have asked him in past at a bar, asked him to be on ESO. And he said he would love to, but he gets asked all the time to be on different
podcasts. And he doesn't do podcasts now.
No, he said if he did ours, he'd then have to do everybody else's.
Yep.
And so, and I thanked him for that in his honesty.
He said, honest about it.
Yeah. And he was very cool about it. So it was cool. Because I'm sure you guys on the Legion podcast have tried to get him.
Yeah, because he finally got to draw. I mean, he's drawn Legion before in Crisis, but he finally got to really stretch his legs with Legion in Final Crisis, Legion of Three Worlds.
Oh, which is an awesome book, folks. Yep,
an awesome book. And we wanted him on it, of course. And George is one of those guys, he's really in demand. And you can't blame him for not wanting to be. He can't show favoritism. And once he does one, he's going to have people lined up around the block. And he doesn't want to talk about what he does all day. He wants to do what he does all day. So,
and if he shows up on Chris Hardwick, I am going to kill him.
Well, I think we would. That would be the best game of Clue ever.
Well,
Well, I also...
Yeah. enough said.
We talked about how great he is at cons and everything. He was... When I first started doing... getting published as a writer at cons, one of the first things was look around and see other creators handle themselves at cons. And you can learn good and a lot about from watching other creators. And early on, I started modeling my behavior and how I treated people off of how I watched George treat people. So it became a barometer for how I would act on how I would interact with people coming to me. And, you know, that's a lot, too, that of just the way he treats people. He treats everybody like he treats them well with respect, which is awesome. But, you know, if you walk up his table for the 2 or 5, whatever he can get, because he almost always fine, you know, however long you're there, he treats you like you're the most important person in the world at the moment. And it's kind of something I had to explain how I interacted with people that come up to my table.
No, I completely agree with that, and that's the way it should be. The nicer you treat people, and George is the nicest the way he treats everybody.
Yeah, I just saw him at a convention just back in December. He was at a show up here in Massachusetts, and he was sketching all day, both days. Just mm-hmm. He had a line of people, and he rarely got up from his table, and just hours and hours, Saturday and Sunday, and through it all, big smile, drawing whatever people wanted. I got a beautiful Blue Devil sketch from him that day, but he was just happy to chat with everybody. He'd pop up and take pictures with everybody. Just amazing watching that guy work just nonstop all weekend.
You can hear him across the floor laughing.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly. Guys, for anyone who has never seen George's work before, what would you guys recommend? Let's go around real quick, and then we'll end the segment. Let's start with Darren.
New Teen Titans Run.
Okay. Bobby.
I would say he's already mentioned Titans, Wonder Woman. And now they do have an omnibus. Find on Amazon for like $48 worth the price.
Oh, yeah. All right, Kevin?
Yeah, I'd say go with one of the New Teen Titans collections also. If you don't want to go that way, my runners-up would be JLA Avengers or Crisis.
Well, gee, you took two, and one of them was mine.
Oops.
Well, I'm going to go even older, George, then. If you want to, they have available in trade is the Avengers Korvac Saga, which is the first time the Avengers met the Guardians of the Galaxy. How's that for a tie-in? Nice. So it was actually a lot of fun, and George did a great job with all the heroes. So check it out, and there's a ton of other work, and we'll have stuff up on the ESO Amazon store, of course. So
there are also art books.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was. That's what I was going to say, because those are going to be up there in the store. So please, please check it out, and we want to hear from you. Please write us esopodcast@gmail.com. Let's take a quick break, and we'll be back in a moment with the Con Report.
Hey, ESO listeners, and welcome to A Geek Girl's Take. I'm your host, Angela, and this week I'm talking about fandom-themed cookbooks. Now, I'm a big fan of theme parties reviewing TV shows or movies, and having a theme cookbook to help you make that party even slightly more geeky is something I'm all for. So I'm going to tell you about a few of my favorites that you can find in most bookstores or on Amazon. To start off, who doesn't love Star Wars? Most of the world right now is Star Wars crazy. The Star Wars cookbook Wookiee Cookies and Other Galactic Treats is one of my favorites to take off my shelf and make food from. It is in full color, and the recipes are fun and easy to make. Also, they go great for that Star Wars viewing party. Enough food to make it through all 6 films in the comfort of your living room. The unofficial Harry Potter cookbook is a really great looking book as well. It has great recipes from all the movies and books, and it looks like a spell book. The pages are jagged at the top, so it looks like a really cool little spell book. So you're in your kitchen making spells. And the recipes are easy. So even if you aren't like super good at cooking, you can still make some really fun stuff. This one would be great for like a Harry Potter themed birthday party for kids. Nerdy Nummies is a really fun cookbook, too, and this is a brand new one that just came out a few months ago. It has a lot of the same recipes from the YouTube show with the same name, and a lot of new recipes for the cookbook. They are targeted at people who are beginning to learn to cook, so this is great for those who aren't too savvy in the kitchen. And if you like Doctor Who, I need to make a shameless plug for my unofficial Doctor Who cookbook, Shut Up and Eat, the unofficial Doctor Who Series 8 cookbook, which has an entire meal's worth of recipes for every episode of Series 8. It also has fantastic artwork by my friend Ginger, and it's great for families to make food in the kitchen, or if you're an adult and you just want to relax, there are also alcoholic drinks to enjoy in it too. So, this is a great one for those viewing parties as well, because it's an entire meal for every episode. So, thank you guys so much for listening to A Geek Girl's Take. What will I talk about next week? Stay tuned to listen and find out.
Welcome back. Now it's time for the ESO Con Report. Yes, usually you hear Mike G talking all about all the cons, but you're stuck with me this week, so and Kevin, of course.
I'm still here, too.
Yep, exactly. So we're going to talk to you about all the upcoming cons and coming up, and starting with this weekend, you're going to be at a con, Kevin.
Yeah, I've got a show coming up this weekend. I'm not going to be at this one in any official capacity, but I will be creeping around there, so look for me if you're going. And that's the Northeast Comic Con, which is June 18th and 19th in Wilmington, Massachusetts.
Oh, awesome.
It's a fun little show. It's become one of my favorite local shows here in the Boston area. It's actually run by Gary Summers, who a lot of people would remember from Antiques Roadshow. He was that funny guy in the Hawaiian shirt, the pop culture expert.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, Gary runs this show, and it's a really fun show. He gets a real interesting mix of guests, and he'll have, like, there's comedy shows going on and puppet demonstrations and acting workshops and all kinds of weird stuff like that is going on. The bunch of fun guests, the guest of honor, one of the main guests of honor, at least this weekend, will be right in the middle of the Monkees' 50th anniversary tour. Actually, they have a few days off, and Mickey Dolenz is coming to Northeast Comic Con.
Oh, you can't really go on Facebook without seeing the Monkees up there right now.
They are
everywhere. So that's awesome that you're going to be able to see them.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. And if they actually do a concert Saturday night during Northeast Comic Con, and I have it on authority from Gary himself. I talked to him a couple of weeks ago. He said Mickey is going to perform.
Is Peter going to join him?
Peter's not going to be there.
Okay.
But yeah, Mickey and Peter are on the Monkees tour, of course. But at Northeast Comic Con, it's just going to be Mickey. There's actually a band called Loose Salute that does a lot of Monkees covers and Mike Nesmith covers. So I think they're going to be backing up Mickey at this show. And Gary told me he has no idea what Mickey's going to do, but he's doing something. So it was part of the concert Saturday night. We're going to get to see Mickey.
That is awesome. Sounds exciting.
Yeah.
Very nice. All right. Also this weekend on June 24th, Dr. Q is going to be at the Mythic Speakeasy Electro Swing at the Red Light Cafe here in Atlanta. It almost seems like it's monthly now that he's doing the electro swings. And from what the pictures have been, I've got to make my way to one of these. These look fantastic.
That sounds so insanely fun. I can't believe you've got to get there.
Exactly. You know, the speakeasy electro swing just sounds really fun.
Does not sound like a solemn occasion. It sounds like they're having a good time.
Oh, no. I don't know if Dr. Q knows how to be, you know, solemn. So, but also that same weekend on June 25th and 26th, me and Mike Gordon are going to be in Huntsville, Alabama at Concaster Burris. That's right. We are going to be at a Doctor Who con again. You know, we are going to meet the sixth doctor himself, Colin Baker. We're also going to meet one of my favorite companions of the second doctor. We're going to meet Fraser Hines, Jamie McCrimmon himself. It's going to be a lot of fun, and we're going to have a lot of friends of the show are there. It's a lot of the same people who go to Timegate, where a lot of times drive out to Huntsville. So it's only like 3 hours from Atlanta. And it's definitely worth it. They have a great crew. They have great programming. And they're at a new hotel this year. So please do check them out. Then June 30th through the 3rd, you, Kevin, are going to be in Minnesota, of all places.
Yeah, this time I'm traveling some distance away from our Boston area home here at the Flopcast. Yeah, we're going out to Bloomington, Minnesota which is just outside the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. It's right by the airport. It's right by the Mall of America, a super convenient location. And this is Convergence, which is a pretty big fantasy and science fiction convention. They do a lot of really interesting programming there, a lot of science. There's a bunch of actual scientists doing astronomy demonstrations and biology and all kinds of real interesting stuff going on all weekend. It's a big party scene, a lot of costumes. And my friends from skeptchick.org, which is like a skeptical feminist blog site, they run Skepticon as well, right in the middle of Convergence. So they're running a lot of really cool programming as well.
So it's a con within a con, basically.
It's a con within a con, Skepticon, part of Convergence this year.
I'm skeptical about that, though.
Yeah, you are wise to be skeptical. You should always doubt everything until you seek evidence, Mike. But I do have some pretty solid evidence that this is really happening. So I am confident that Skepticon is for real this year. And I'm also going to be on some panels at Convergence, so look for me there. I'm doing a panel about Supergirl, actually, the Supergirl show. And I'm going to be on a panel about iZombie also, and maybe one or two more.
That sounds amazing. And of course, as we like to say, coming up in September is the big daddy of cons for us.
Oh, yes.
Dragon Con is on the horizon.
I can't wait.
It's going to be exciting. As always, my liver will hate me for a couple months after. But you know what? It's such a great time, and got to see everybody.
They're stocking up on buckets at the Hyatt right now, just hearing that Mike Faber's coming back to Atlanta for Dragon Con.
Of course. You know, beware.
Or buckets of rum will be waiting for you.
Oh, I don't know if I want to go back to the buckets after we had Darren's apple pie last year.
That is an excellent point. I'm with you. I'm sticking with Darren's pie. That was amazing.
It was amazing. What I almost remember now is it was great. So we want to hear from you guys. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com. Drop us a line if there's a con you want to talk about or help us promote, you know, or if you want ESO there, please let us know. We would be glad to help you out. So that's going to wrap up another episode of the Earth Station One podcast. Kevin, you made it as the co-host this week.
This was an honor and a privilege to step in and fill in for our pal Mike Gordon, who I look forward to getting back up here on the station as soon as possible.
Oh, hopefully Mr. Howdy will be back next week.
Yeah.
So it should be a lot of fun. But thank you so much for helping out, and especially last minute. And we do appreciate it.
Anytime. I know it's part of my contract that I signed in blood when the Flopcast joined ESO.
Are you sure it wasn't chicken blood?
Oh, I know it definitely was chicken blood.
Ah, yeah. Okay. Voodoo now. Got it.
Yes.
That it so explains this day so much.
Yep.
Okay. Anything you want to shout out about, sir?
Just a reminder where you can find my little show. Speaking of the Flopcast, we do a show here on the ESO network. Every single week, it's me and my lovely co-host Cornflake, and it's just a silly, geeky show. Check us out, flopcast.net.
Excellent. Thank you, sir. And Mr. Darren.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being here, bud.
You're welcome.
Anything
it's nice to be somewhere.
It is. No matter where you're at, there you are.
There you are. Yep.
I had to throw that in there.
Yeah, it's understandable.
Exactly. So, what do you got to shout out about, sir?
LegionsLoveToosPodcasters.com. That's where I am most of the time. Excellent. And we'll have another LGBT ESO podcast on...
2 weeks.
In a few weeks, yeah.
We're doing...
In honor of Stonewall.
We're going to do...
Which Wizard just became really important.
Yes. Very much so. Very, very much so.
So stay tuned for that rant.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. All right. Well, thank you, sir. And, of course, returning to the station out of the airlock is Mr. Bobby Nash.
And since Mike's not here, I can go, as always, it's my pleasure.
Hey. He's smiling somewhere when he, you know, his ears perked up on that one.
Anything? I dropped a quarter in the bucket before.
Well, hold on, Bobby. Let me do it for you. Howdy.
There you go.
Hey, Kevin did that also at the beginning of the show.
Oh, so there you go. So
he said we could
end it now.
We couldn't do a show like this without a howdy.
Sure.
So, Bobby, what do you got to shout out about, sir?
Well, actually, later this month, the first issue of the new ongoing comic series that I'm writing will be in comic shops. The first issue of Domino Ladies Threesome, which is a team-up book that I am... the first two issues I'm co-writing with our friend Nancy Holder. First issue will be in stores the last week of this month.
When you said that word, it was just like, what? Ooh, okay.
Well, because Domino Lady was part of the Spicy Pulps, all of her titles have some kind of innuendo to them. So
I kind of
figured. But it's basically, it's a team-up book where Domino Lady will team up with two other characters, hence the threesome title.
Nice. Very nice. Your own version of Brave and the Bold. That's awesome.
Exactly.
Tying into George again, you know.
And you know what? I have a new Bobby Nash book once again here. Last time I was at my comic shop, I picked up Sherlock Holmes and Domino Lady, which has a story by Bobby in it.
Yes, and I wrote part of the comics in it.
Hey, cool.
I have it right here. Looking forward to reading it.
Oh, thank you. I hope you enjoy.
Sure, I will.
I am.
Also, before we go, I guess we'll all see each other at Dragon Con.
Oh, yes, we will.
Absolutely.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, that's right, because you've had too much to drink. That's why.
Well, I got this podcast you should listen to, Aaron.
Really? Okay.
Oh, God. quick shout out to everyone in Atlanta. I'm going to be this weekend. I'm going to go be at the Weird Al show on Sunday night at the Fox Theater. And I think I'm like seven rows from the front. So,
wow.
So it should be
polka'd out.
Oh, you could never be polka'd out. Come on. I'll polka my eyes out. It'll be a lot of fun and hoping very much to see everyone there. You know, I know a lot of friends of the show are going to be there. I know Alex Autry is going to be there. I know a couple other folks from some of the different shows we have are going to be there. And I know Metro Atlanta Geeks has a group going. So definitely please stop by and say hi. You know, if so, first person who says howdy will get a special gift. So that's always a little incentive. So definitely, you know, looking forward to it. And before we get out of here, wanted to wish Mike Gordon a quick and speedy recovery. And he'll be back with us, like we said, hopefully next week. And speaking of next week, we are going to be talking all about one-hit wonders. And we're not talking about music. We are talking about TV shows. We are talking about one-and-done seasons of TV shows. And yes, a certain show that all those brown coats like will be talked about. So I have a feeling we'll be getting into it. Joe Crow is so upset he won't be here. So Manimal will be brought up, I'm sure.
Auto Man, Misfits of Science, the Power of Matthew Starr. Go!
Whiz Kids.
Exactly. Ooh, even better.
Exactly. So there's plenty of them. I think we might even have the same cast as this week. You never know.
I'm ready to do that show right now.
Okay. So until then, my name is Mike Faber. It has been awesome to talk to you guys. See you next time here on Earth Station 1. Peace. And we're done.
You've been listening to Earth Station 1, a weekly podcast that explores the many worlds of all things geek. Please write us at esopodcast@gmail.com or call us at 404-963-9057. And if we find what you say interesting, we'll put it up on the air. If you've enjoyed our show, please rate us or leave feedback for us up on iTunes. And while you're there, subscribe to our show or any of the ESO Network podcasts. We can also be found up on Stitcher Radio or wherever fine podcasts are found. ESO is also available up on most social media sites like Facebook, Twitter, and so many more. The show is brought to you by the fine folks at the ESO Amazon.com eStore, where right from our website you can find all kind of geeky goodness. And if you get something up there, you also help support the station. ESO also has a Zazzle store to buy cool ESO merchandise and such. Show your ESO love with something from Zazzle. To learn more about ESO, our website is esopodcast.com. The show is produced by Calico Productions. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you here next time on the Earth Station 1 podcast. Peace.
That's it. The show's over. It's time to head home. See you next week here at Earth Station 1.
Bye-bye, boys.
Have fun storming the castle.
Think it'll work?
It would take a miracle.
Bye-bye.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.